Welcome to Radio Sweb. This is the second edition of your safety program on tape.
Thanks for the words of encouragement and profound good sense many of you have sent us after edition one.
The consensus seemed to be that we've got the balance just about right in terms of you at work, you in the rest of your life, but that you wanted the program to be principally work-related safety.
The sun has got his hat on. Hip, 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 hooray!
In this edition, we encourage you to keep your shirt on this summer, even if the sun does have his hat on. It's all about you, the ozone layer, and what you need to know about the sun in order to keep the family healthy.
Here we go, ladies.
Full body exercise is trendy, whether it's leaping about to the stern commands of Jane Fonda, golly who wouldn't, running, jumping, cycling, and generally working up a sweat. Now, should you be doing any of these things before you've checked out your general state of health?
But this edition starts with the kind of news we wish we did not have to bring you. This year's accident figures are out, and they show no improvement whatever. Further to that, when you look at our figures against other wrecks, our accident figures are poor by comparison.
We can still claim a good safety record in terms of electrical accident, like the rest of the wrecks, but we let ourselves down with the stupid accidents. All together now,
slips, trips, falls, and manual handling.
60% of all SWEB accidents fall into that category. And safety manager Mike Cockrum is a disappointed man. I asked him how he interprets the figures.
Yes, it really means that we haven't taken the majority of those accidents seriously. Because had we done that, we'd have learnt from them. Particularly the manual handling side, we'd have either changed the method, improved mechanisation, things of that sort. The real reason is that people are not discharging their responsibilities.
The particular responsibility he refers to is accident reporting. It's a job that too many managers undervalue. And in this view, he's supported by System Performance Manager Bob Samwell.
Well, I think the thing is that no one perceives the real value of filling out the accident reporting form. One of the most important things about filling out the accident reporting form is that we learn from what happened. There's still an element of the blame culture here. Somebody had an accident. Why did they have an accident? It's their fault. Why isn't there a policy that stops them having an accident? I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested in is understanding why the accident took place, making sure that the responsibility of A, the person who had it, is properly understood by him. He wasn't doing something correctly. Equally, when an accident does take place, it's important that the supervisor takes on board his responsibility to work out why the accident took place, to investigate it so he properly understands what happened, and then the most important part of the procedure is to make sure that action is taken to prevent that accident taking place, not only just to the people for whom that supervisor is responsible, not just so that he can learn and the people who work for him can understand what happened, but we use that accident report across the whole of the company.
According to Kim Wheeler, a union nominee on the Exeter HESAC, it's a rare occurrence for an accident report to be accepted first time round. It's normal for the account of an accident to be returned, for more information to be added, wasting time and effort as memories of the accident grow dim.
Well, a foreman is asked to comment on an accident, when in fact the chances are he's not on site at the time. He's had to go away and see the chap after the accident, get some information himself, and having got that information, well, it's very little he can do about it. I think people should be more accountable for their actions. For example, if there's someone that's organising a job, whoever that may be, should be asked to provide the investigation and a report.
It's the investigation element that too often gets minimised, shall we say. It seems that areas which could become confrontational get ducked as too much hassle. Mike Cockrum.
It is seen as, oh dear, it's something else I must do because there is a requirement, there is a company procedure, it is a legal document that says we must report accidents, but really it's just a pain in the arse and why should I bother? I've got other things to do. How do I manage staff? How do I get the job done? How do I reduce my costs? All these things come into the frame.
Managers and supervisors who find it difficult to rate safety alongside other business measurements and responsibilities should be aware of the view of Operations Director Dr. Malcolm Carson.
I put it on a par with the control of capital, the control of revenue, the control of resources. and I expect my management to treat safety and accidents in particular in the same way, to motivate their staff and to ensure the safety of their staff. If they fail in any of these respects, then in fact they fail as managers.
So it's clear, demonstrating responsible safety management is a key part of ambition in SWIB. Senior management is determined that our accident profile will improve quickly, that errors must be pointed up and confronted. Bob Samuel says our approach may have to become rather less comfortable.
So the big debate is, for us, is the carrot the way to go, or should we start using the stick? If the stick is the only way we're going to do it, we're going to use the stick.
Bob feels we have to get better at pointing out work error wherever it occurs. He feels we're traditionally good at saying, well done, good work, and traditionally not good at saying, this work is poor, why? Thus, in safety, we need to build up the investigation part of the accident report form. A revised form is soon to be released. It runs to two sides of A4. Mike Cockrum.
The real important bit is on the back, because one wants to be reactive to accidents and therefore make improvements. So on the back are several headings which will help people get the right information and prevent it happening again. If you look at the human factors bit, right, we're talking about carelessness on the job, lack of attention. Does the man feel all right? Is he wearing the wrong clothes? Then you can go on to the system of work. Was it correct? Was it being followed? Was there any deficiency in the company procedure? Were we wrong? Is there something we can do? Equipment and tools. Was the tool defective? Were they the sort of tools the company had specified for that job? Was it correct? Lifting and moving. Did he have enough assistance to lift? Did he have enough mechanical aids to help him do it? Because it's most important that we minimise lifting. And finally asking the question, was he properly trained for the job? Most important that there's proper training for these men. It's trying to collect the right information in a structured way so that you can make for continuous improvement.
Some supervisors and a HESEC member like the look of it.
They are all the questions that I would hope to ask anyway, but at least they've got a visual guide so as I don't miss any.
It's slowly getting better. I say some supervisors are getting on board and really looking into the accident, as in the report side of it, and some are just giving one or two word answers. On the breakdown side of things, it should help.
That our accident figures will reduce is likely. The more we mechanise, the more we train, the more pressure is placed on us by society. But that evolutionary speed will not satisfy our employers. Doc Carson spells it out.
What I wish to see is more urgency in the whole issue of reducing our current level of accidents. We will have to ourselves manage that process far more quickly, and that requires initiatives and leadership on behalf of all our managers and supervisors in the company. There is a wreck not very far from our borders. 19 depots out of 31 have achieved zero accidents in 12 months. That is what I'm seeking, at least from my company.
Must be rather embarrassing going to the Electricity Association's safety conference every year and only to hear that everybody else is getting safer than we are.
No, I definitely got that impression. I always remember an international oil giant telling its workforce that 10% we don't spend having accidents is the easiest profit we'll ever make.
The sun has got his hat on. Hip, 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 hooray!
Well, there's every prospect that we'll eventually get our share of sunshine in this part of the year. But has sunshine actually become a health threat?
Let's just say the sun has to be better understood by all of us, particularly if you have charge of children.
It would certainly be very serious if we didn't get any sun at all. It's very good for us in small doses. But a reduction in the amount of ozone haze between the sun itself and our skin means that there's now more ultraviolet light in the sunshine which reaches us. And that's the part of sunlight which burns the surface of the skin.
So we have to treat the sun more carefully than ever before.
If you don't want to permanently damage your skin and run an increased risk of skin cancer, it's vital you understand the risk involved in sunbathing.
If you do it in Britain, well, you can get ultraviolet almost as strong in the middle of the day in summer. But in Spain and places of that sort, it goes on for much longer in the day. So in this country, we've got to take care as well. we need to be aware that the middle of the day is the time that's a problem, say between about 11 and 3 throughout summer. May not be hot, may be a cold breeze. It may not be bright. There may be light cloud over the sun. But at that time of the day, there's a lot of ultraviolet about.
Dr. John Hawke, a New Zealander who runs the St. John's Dermatology Centre in London. He'd prefer it if suntans went out of fashion. For most of us, it's just damaged skin anyway. Dr. Alan Marsden points to a population group who have no built-in sun protection at all.
The Celts. People of the Western seaboard, the Cornish, the Irish, the Welsh and the Scots, who never tan at all. They have no natural protection. Sun, and they're the very people who were deported to Australia a couple of hundred years ago, and it's their successors who are having all the problems in Australia.
The problems he refers to among Celts in Australia is skin cancer, the form of cancer you're most likely to contract in England too. Skin cancer is doubling in incidence every decade or so. 1,500 people died of the disease in Britain last year.
If you want your shirt off, well, slap a sun cream on. I mean, they're very good sun creams. You may not want to do it, but if you don't, if you burn easily, you're going to gradually get old, wrinkled, dry, itchy skin. You're going to spend your 60s and 70s scratching away.
More than 50% of men with melanoma get the lesions on the back or the front, whereas it's the opposite in women. More than 50% of women get their tumours on the legs. And that's another area that's exposed to the sun rather intermittently and burns very frequently.
We now know that pale skins must be very carefully exposed to the sun's rays. Neither of the specialists I talk to have any time for low-factor lotions, and there's no evidence that the more expensive brands are better able to filter the sunlight.
It's what happens when you're a child that counts most, and people get half their exposure, it's been estimated, by the age of 18. So it's what happens in childhood, and children have more time to be outside, and children don't know about sunlight, and children don't realise they're getting burnt. So you have to be very careful with children. You have to make sure they are covered up. You have to make sure they do have sun creams on. They don't like them, of course. You have to make sure that they're protected.
If you want to get ahead, get a hat and some high-factor sunscreen across the shoulders for all the family.
Now, what about sunbeds?
Well, UV light just ages the skin however you get it.
There is good evidence now that over the years that you're going to get skin cancer, and certainly old, wrinkled, dry, itchy skin with sunbeds just as well as you do with sunlight.
I often encourage my medical students to examine the buttocks of elderly ladies. Those covered areas of skin don't look freckled, don't look wrinkled, don't look aged. So really, in my view, if dermatologists are to preach, they should preach against the sun because of its aging effects.
Our thanks to Drs. John Hawke and Alan Marsden.
You know, Trish, I found that a bit scary because I'm a Celt who's lived in Australia for part of my life, and I get all red and itchy if I don't stay covered up.
Well, that's good news for the holiday industry, Andy, if you're going to stay covered. And you'll do that rain or shine, I think.
Absolutely, yes.
It's particularly the females who've taken up the aerobic challenge. Sports centres all over the Western Peninsula are packed with women bent on improving their outline. Even the most casual survey of the engineering strength of SWEP would seem to confirm that here too are some outlines that could do to be less ample.
With that in mind, Trish, I went to meet Jed Roddy, the fitness coach of the Victorious Bath Rugby Club. We gossiped about how to set about a programme of full-body exercise, something regular which makes you sweat. He's all for the planned approach, which starts at your GP's Wellman clinic, to make sure you're fit enough to roll off the sofa in the first place.
My advice is to look to an activity that you actually enjoy doing. Don't make the thing hell for yourself. Enjoy it.
Does that perhaps involve looking at your past?
If as a 25-year-old you were playing front row for Bath and you're now in your 40s, you're unlikely to go back to doing that. So you might have to look at new things. You can't do much better than getting involved with something like swimming, for example. Great exercise. Your body weight is suspended, so there's no stress to your body. Your only problem is if you can't swim, then you're
going to die.
So obviously choose an activity you can do, choose an activity that you feel is safe. don't suddenly decide that for the first time in your life you're going to jump on a squash court and run around madly, because that's the naive thing to do.
The great temptation, of course, is to buy yourself a pair of trainers, pull on the shorts that you haven't worn since the North African campaign, and and go road running. Now, what about that? A lot of people be tempted to do that.
Well, running is a great form of exercise. Do it sensibly. Build it up. Road running is not bad in itself, but make sure that you also look to run on soft surfaces and you don't overdo it.
Okay, so basically you appear to be saying that it's not a difficult thing to do. Look to your past, look to things that you've enjoyed, and take a planned approach.
Another key thing to remember in all of this is, essentially, you're talking about your social life. Get a friend on board, because personally, there is nothing worse than going out and treading the roads on your own in the rain. We're actually standing by a swimming pool here at the moment, and the amount of twos and threes that come in is great.
So we've gone through planned approach, don't spend too much money, don't go for things hell for leather, check your health before you do things, perhaps look to something that you know you enjoy and do it with friends.
Absolutely.
So there you are, no more excuses. Bird watching and putting ships in bottles don't qualify, but anything that makes you sweat regularly does.
By the way, Dave Hugo in stores at Taunton and Richard Brown, a linesman from Bodmin, both won a £50 night out for their wise words about Radio Sweb. There's another two £50 nights out for 20 wise words on reporting accident. One prize for the first, one for the best, to Mike Cockrum, deep in the silver spaceship. Details on the tape insert.
Isn't it amazing how kids see things clearly, which become obscure as we're all supposed to be grown up? Sweb sponsored a children's farm safety poster competition, and the winners got their prizes at the Bath and West show.
Everything around, you just got to watch, and I mean, these, like in the class one, the person who won was doing round bales, and if you like people go climbing on them, probably will collapse on you. Just got to use your common sense and not go on them.
Tractors are not toys, are they? And the boy rides on the tractor and he crashes and the tractor's upside down and he's down the bottom saying help.
In the country, there's just as many hazards as there are in the town. I mean, most people think of it as very quiet, but you just... There's many hazards that you can get involved with and everything. You've just got to be so careful nowadays.
What 11-year-old Anya told us is borne out by our own statistics. Remember, in the town or country, we need to get those accidents down. So look after yourself.
Bye-bye. Radio Sweb is an AP production. Studio direction by Trish Jarman.